Welcome to Jackson's American Tales. I'm Jackson Jones. In this podcast, we're going to talk to ordinary people all about their extraordinary life stories.
Right before I left my last year of college, my entire apartment building burned down.
This week's episode is a lot of fun. We sit down with the very interesting Allie Lindsay.
2 years later, when I lived in Chicago and I was living in Roscoe Village, my apartment burned down.
We're going to follow her journey from small town, middle America, to the big city, to the medium city, and talk about the journey of finding oneself and doing something you've always dreamed of but never had the courage to do.
I just dreamed and wished my life away for 20 years. So at 38, I quit my job. But for real, I am kind of walking proof of someone who didn't take a lot of risks.
Enjoy this week's episode of Jackson's American Tales. So where are you from?
I am actually from downstate Illinois, like the Midwestern Illinois farm community called Bushnell.
How downstate?
Like close to Missouri and Iowa.
Okay, well, no, that's so, overstate.
So, well, it's Illinois. It's down. It's Midwestern.
Like, are we talking? Are we talking Peoria?
Yes.
Downstate? Further?
Near Peoria.
Near Peoria.
Yeah.
Okay, and so, how long did you live there?
So I was born there, born and raised there, and I actually went to college in the next town over again, still a rural community, but enough for a university, Western Illinois University. That's the area I grew up in, which is Macomb, Illinois. Anyway, it's near Peoria, Springfield. How? And anyway, yeah, I was born and raised there, and I lived there until early 20s.
Okay, Illinois is a long state. And
it
when
is
we think of Illinois, we think of Chicago and yep. Sausages, okay?
Yeah.
But you get down to mid to lower Illinois, and you got some y'alls getting thrown.
Definitely have some y'alls. We're close enough to Missouri too.
I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana, and I sound like I climbed out of a bayou.
You kind of do.
We got a lot of hillbilly in our family.
You must.
I can edit that. I don't worry about that. Yeah. So you don't have an accent at all. I've noticed. You have a very I would call it non-regional dialect.
I appreciate that. I can slip one way or the other if I go home for a little while.
That's
I can
good for news. Like if you were to be a newscaster,
nice.
They love that kind of stuff.
Good.
So you grew up in South Central Illinois. Can we call
It's yeah, mid it's the middle of the state and it's on the west side, whatever. So the middle of Midwestern, it's probably feels southern to a lot of people. Anybody south of Chicago thinks we're from the south.
Yeah, I suppose.
Sorry, shouldn't say that. Yep. Okay. Watch my language.
Like a sailor in here.
I know, watch my language.
So were your parents together when you were born?
Yeah.
Okay, what
did
mom and dad do?
My dad, he ended up his life farming. His parents were farmers. And
what kind of farming?
Cattle and mostly livestock when I was young, but then transitioned into corn and beans.
Ooh.
So,
corn in Illinois.
Yeah.
The corn belt right there.
Corn belt, know it. So so on one hand, on my dad's side of the family, it was like farmers from the area.
Yeah.
My dad actually went into banking for a while. Most of his life when I was a teen or beyond, he was a farmhand, either on my grandma's farm or somewhere else. So my mother was a teacher.
What did she teach?
She taught Spanish and English. She's just newly retired, actually.
Was she like a high school Spanish teacher?
Yeah.
Did you go to her school?
I did not. We went to different schools. She, coming from a really tiny town, we're talking 3,500 people. So my high school graduating class was 60. And that's two tiny towns put together.
I don't want to be a one-upper.
Yeah, well, tell me.
32.
Shut your face.
I was 28th. And
oh, my God.
That's
tiny.
It's tiny. Yeah.
I didn't realize you were
prom court. Prom court is 16 people. So there's 30.
It's like half
there's, that literally is half.
Did you make prom court?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
So because that's 16, that's eight couples. But the next year for homecoming, I didn't make that one. That one hurt.
Ooh.
Yeah. What happened?
You
what
rebel.
Happened in 6 months? that's during my story, though. So your mom's a Spanish teacher. So do you habla español?
Un poquito. Yeah, not really.
Means.
Like, not much. Tiny bit. Yeah, it was one of those things where anything that your parents are into, you defy.
Oh,
you know, I hate
okay.
myself now because I don't speak fluent Spanish.
It would be very handy.
It would be incredibly handy.
Yeah.
And it has, kind of. It's come back to bite me in the ass a time or two where I wish that I could speak fluently. I wish I could be bilingual. I think it's incredible,
also,
and I wasted that opportunity.
You have someone at home. That's like living with a Rosetta Stone.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I actually, funny enough, that my mom, because she taught what she did, living in rural Illinois where it's bland and sameness and mm-hmm. whatever, I was probably the most ethnic home because – at Christmas time, our entire house was decorated in Feliz Navidad.
Oh, wow.
Because they were gifts given by students. So if you were to come to my house, you would see a wreath on our front door in our tiny crap you town just, that says Feliz Navidad. Indeed. Yes. And it's me.
See, yeah, you are ethnic would not be a word. Maybe if you were in a country where no one looked like you, they would refer to you as ethnic.
Maybe.
So, wait a minute. She's the what we call ethnic.
Cultural.
Yeah.
That's about as diverse as it gets,
yeah,
in that
if
town.
If you were in India, like, you'd be referred to as an exotic.
Indeed. Blue eyes. Oh, yeah.
So were you a good student in school?
I kind of was. I was kind of a good girl. It's such a small town that everybody.
Well, did the
watchful eyes.
Did the teachers know that your mom was a teacher as well? So, like, was there expectations on you?
Maybe a little bit. Oh. Not too much. I also had an older sister who was like, I don't think. Oh God, please don't. Oh. Yeah. Anyway, all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, I don't want my sister to listen to this, but like, I don't think she paved a good path for me in school necessarily. But no, I was actually a fine student. It wasn't really very hard to get decent grades. Not a great education. Pretty simple.
Well, they write the answers on the blackboard during class if you pay attention. That's what I noticed.
Kind of. You know, there weren't very many advanced classes. It wasn't necessarily like I didn't grow up in a town where it was, you know, majorly college, but I mean, it was. A lot of people did go to college.
We'll,
but
we'll get into this later, but yep. I don't want to ask you your age, but just so I know what we're working
no,
with
let's
here.
Do
what
it.
Year, what year did you graduate high school?
I graduated high school in 95.
95? Okay.
Yep.
All right. Okay. I know what time period you're
yep.
working on.
We're talking Stranger Things. Like, I would have been around, you know, that age in the 80s, you know,
so
like as a teen.
You
or
remember
like a young
when schools started using computers then?
I do. I took typing.
I did too.
On a typewriter and then an IBM, you know, or something. I for sure do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Back in the
the old dial-up.
Oh my gosh. I started college when there was barely dial-up. I mean, you know, there were only so many servers. You couldn't even ever get on, do anything. Yeah.
So your sister was a bit of a ne'er-do-well, as you can say.
Maybe.
Had a bit of a reputation.
I
was it just
so.
Was it just the two of you girls?
Two of us. And she's 6 years older than I, so it was a huge gap. Anyway,
but still,
some of the younger.
Like
yep.
when the teachers heard your name, they were like, "Oh, you're blah 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 sister."
Exactly.
Oh, good times.
Exactly.
Good times.
Doesn't probably happen that often with females. It's mostly like, "Oh, your older brother." That's how it's depicted on TV.
I had the same problem. My older brother and I have different last names. He's Italian.
Oh, really?
Doesn't look anything like me. But they
did
figured
they know?
They had like it's written down somewhere, and I think his is highlighted because they'd go, "Oh, you're Brandon Lombardo's brother, aren't you?" And I went, "Yeah. Why?"
Did he not?
Oh, he was an asshat.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's, yeah. If you're listening, you're an asshat. Yeah. Yeah.
If my sister's listening, she's also an asshat, but I love her.
Yeah. I don't. Anyways. So were you good? You had good grades. Were you a good kid, though? Did you get in any trouble?
I was a fairly good kid. Like, I didn't, I probably mouthed off a lot more in junior high and high school. I, you know, had my own frustrations, but I didn't necessarily act so defiantly to draw attention to myself or to get grounded. Or I'm making myself sound like a goody-goody. I guess I kind of was. I didn't even drink in high school or like smoke pot. Like
loser.
I know, a total loser. There are things about me that are very like latent in development, and I didn't even have an awareness of like drugs in high school and like.
Well, in a small town, like there's really not a lot to do other
than
drink and get stoned.
And that's totally true. But if I got caught getting stoned, then I couldn't, or get caught drinking or anything. It's such a small town that it gets back to your school and then you can't do your activity. You know what I mean?
What activities did you do?
Well, I was in marching band.
Oh, what did you play?
I played the trumpet. I was first trumpet through school.
I know. First trumpet. That's all business right there.
And I used to play taps every year at the cemetery for Memorial Day.
Little Allie out here for the fourth year in a row playing taps.
Right?
Not sure who we're going to get when she goes to college. The last kid that we had's got a gimpy arm and started playing Star-Spangled
Banner.
So
such a small town that like, and there was very little outlet to express yourself or performance. We didn't really even have theater or anything. So I, if you wanted to do anything, you just sort of did everything. And so I was in pom-pom. So I got to, you know, I guess dance squad in high school. So such a small town that I would, let's switch to football. I would be a cheerleader, but then at halftime put on the hat with the feather.
In your cheerleading
and
uniform.
In my cheerleading uniform, playing a solo in the middle of the field as a cheerleader with my marching band.
So you're small. Were you tossed in the air? Because usually it's the small girl.
That's really funny. Yeah, no, I was a pretty heavy girl.
Oh, really?
She's like Black Matter. She's small, but she's heavy.
I was actually a tall girl when I was young. Yeah, I developed very early. Played center for my junior high basketball team. Okay. And I had, you know, boobs before everybody. I was heavy set. I was kind of tomboy. Definitely softball player, like first baseman.
Oh.
You know, like I was like the big girl. Isn't that funny?
Okay.
And then everyone else.
I'm not tiny, but you're small.
I am. I'm 5 feet tall.
Yeah.
And shrinking. Yeah. So.
It just gets better. It just gets better.
Yeah. So, So in terms of like how that plays into my future, like my idea of self, I was fat. I wasn't the fat girl, but I was a fat girl.
Okay.
Hence, like in a community, in a group of popular girls, attractive girls, I'm leading to myself getting to the point of why I might have been interested in comedy or why I had to develop a sense of humor. Well, I was poor.
Okay.
And I was fat. And I had to be something. You know what I mean? Tried to be nice and tried to be funny.
See, there you go.
So.
So did you, were you the class clown? Did you like to get a laugh out of people? Like, were,
yeah.
You
did, I guess in a way, I definitely did.
So
yeah.
Like when you were at a party as, were you the loud one? The loud friend?
Well, probably boys. Probably of the girls. Yeah,
guys. Yeah, guys.
Yeah, they kind of trump the.
Well, guys,
they could be more buffoon, or, you know, do more buffoon things.
Also,
you know?
Teenagers are going to do physical comedy.
Yes,
yeah,
no, true enough.
A 15-year-old boy, he's got that super resiliency. He can do those kind of things.
Yep.
So you must have enjoyed performing because you said you were in the band, you're in the pom pom squad, and you're over there cheerleading.
Basically, anything that I could sign up for, I did. That was within my means and my schedule. You know, because there was so little. But I, yeah.
Did you have a desire, like, in the future, were you thinking at that time that you at some point wanted to have a job where you were in front of people?
No.
What did you want to be when you grew up then?
I don't even remember what I wanted to be when I was in high school.
Is that something girls think about? And this is an honest question because it's asked of guys.
Do you think they think more about who they're going to marry instead of what they're going to do?
I wonder.
Yeah,
I honestly wonder. And you and I are a little bit older. And nowadays, yep. It's not. I mean, everything mm-hmm. is a lot more equal. But back in the day, like when you're a guy, even when you're a little boy, what do you want to be when you grow up? But I don't ever remember that being a question that girls were asked
awful lot. You're right.
You know, like, I don't pretty. I don't know. Not that that's the answer, but I think that's what a lot of people would expect someone to say, like, I don't know, kept? What do you want me to say? Because that was my answer.
Totally.
Pretty and kept.
Well, nailed it.
I'm on
you
fire.
Finally got. You finally reached your goal back then.
My wife has 3 jobs. So, yeah.
Boom.
You got me a sugar mama. Yeah, she's got 2 degrees. What up? So you didn't know. You didn't have, like, in high school?
I don't recall knowing exactly. Yeah, I probably remember not knowing being okay with that.
So like in 10th, 11th grade high school, when you guys are taking your SATs, were you planning on, I'm going to go to college to pursue bowling, or I'm going to go to college to pursue, like, what were you?
Well, what I did know was later in high school, again, we were talking about computers. I was on the yearbook staff. So I began learning a little bit of like graphic design. This is 1994.
Okay.
Okay, whatever that means to anybody who cares or knows about technology.
And graphic design still used graph paper.
Pretty much. Not quite. And so I thought that, so when I started college, I actually was a graphic design major, but I was taking a theater class, and theater people were so much cooler. And the graphic design classes were too damn early for me, and the kids weren't as cool, and my professors weren't as cool, and I basically just didn't go. But I would use the multimedia library and check out the video camera, and then with my theater friends, we would, like, make videos on the weekends. And so
you're put good use to your parents' money,
you know,
so far.
My student loans that I'm still in debt with. So I basically just scratched any of that. And was like, okay, I don't know what I want to do with my life exactly. I just know that this is how I want to enjoy my college time. These are cooler people. I had a complete awareness that I grew up in a small town. I mm-hmm. knew that when I moved or got around people of color and of different, you know, backgrounds and different from different places, that was my college experience. I just absorbed different, you know. I wanted to meet people and hear about other places and things because I knew I grew up sheltered.
Yeah, I mean, if you're from a small place and you go somewhere, how many people went to your college? What was the population there?
I don't know.
And was it a pretty decent sized college? Like
fine, yeah, it's a good state college.
Oh, the state college.
Yeah. So Western Illinois University.
Possibly tens of thousands of people.
Yes.
Went there. Yeah.
So and my mom made me live in the dorm. She made me live on campus.
That's great.
And so
that's
like
wonderful.
I had like there was some black girls that lived on my floor. I mean that was a big deal to me. You know, I mean I literally grew up completely 100% white town.
Yeah, a lot of corn down there.
Totally.
Yeah.
So I was just so college for me was not about grades, which are proof on my reports, but was just more about like. I don't know, living.
Experiencing yourself.
Experiencing and
finding
living.
Finding out who you are.
Yeah.
Getting the full experience in there and just taking life in one day at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Or Zen-like.
So, sort of want to backtrack a little, but you're leading it. I don't know.
We need Quentin Tarantino this.
Okay,
let's go around. Let's spin in circles here.
Well, I kind of want to explain, too, when you're asking what my parents did, I think it's kind of important to let you know about my background a little bit again. So, this very small town, paternal grandparents lived on the same farm for 65 years. But my mom's parents, my mom and her family moved from the East Coast when my mom was in high school because my
Coasties.
Well, so my grandparents are what I am now. So we can talk about my parents, but it's really more about my grandparents, my paternal grandparents being farmers, and my maternal grandfather he got his MBA at Harvard and his doctorate of education at Yale or...
So your mom's city folk and your dad's country folk.
Yeah.
Some Great Acres going on here.
Yeah, so then my mother's father, they moved to this town because my grandfather was dean of education at the university.
Oh.
So I had like a huge like just education background, east, like, I don't know, it sounds so stuffy,
no.
East Coast,
well,
but
hey.
Like from a different area.
Certainly.
And then farmers. And so when my grandparents moved to this small town, my grandmother, who she died when I was young, I didn't really know her, only through legacy or whatever talking about her. But she, out of necessity for the town, she and my grandfather founded and opened the Macomb, what is now called the Macomb Community Theater. So there was no community theater in this town until my grandparents moved there. It's now called the Pat Crean Memorial Theater, which is my grandmother, and it still exists. So when I was a kid, I went to 12th night parties. You know, I went to. I slept on theater bleachers while my mom rehearsed a play. And
was your mom in theater? Was she doing it as well?
And my aunts and my nana. So
so you got a performance background in the family.
Yeah. So I'm telling you that just so there's a little bit of understanding, like why I might have had a little bug even in a small town. I mean, it kind of the whole thing is very community theater. It's Waiting for Guffman like esque. You know, the whole thing about it, but still, like, yeah.
I think that's really cool because I don't think that's something that really you see. I don't think that really anyone's going to be opening any memorial theaters in small towns of 3,000 people anymore.
No,
you know, I think that's really neat to come
after
from
she died.
That.
They named it after her. It still exists, and it's a prideful thing. I mean, it's just a small little thing, but it was hugely impactful on my life. And
so, so you like to perform? You like to hang out with the theater kids? You like to be yourself? Did you?
Yep.
How many years did you go to college?
Six.
Oh, you're a super senior.
Oh man, I jerked around a lot.
Did you graduate?
Yeah, barely.
With a degree in what?
In theater.
Oh, okay, all right.
So I did, and when you, you can have an emphasis on acting, so you don't have to have a minor, which basically meant that like I didn't have to buy books.
Very nice loophole.
You know what I mean?
Get to party, get to hang on the theater kids, get to check out some camera equipment, and got to pay for all these books. Extra beer money.
Yep.
So what did you do after, right out of college? What was the plan after that?
Well, I moved to Chicago. So because I was a short girl and, in fact, lady in college, I'm kind of skipping right over that, but I didn't get lead roles. I was always the funny aunt or the neighbor or whatever. I was never the ingenue. You know what I mean? I was like that whole struggle
of being
a basic character actor.
Was it did you sneeze or is that ingenue? Is that
ingenue?
Is that something you dip a sandwich into?
the lead hot pretty girl.
Oh yeah, see, I don't come from
the lead pretty girl.
I come from
the Santa. So I was never that. And then I got cast in a two woman show, Parallel Lives, written by Kathy and Jimmy and Mo Gaffney. I don't know. Anyway, they play each. I played like 14 different characters, and so all of a sudden I got to have a huge, like a substantial part, play all of these different characters. Felt totally in my element. Was like, oh, I see maybe where I fit in. I understand a little bit more like what I'm doing in this whole acting world, and how I fit in just because I can't play the lead in a, you know, a Shakespeare play or whatever. Sketch comedy became suddenly like, it was in the, like one of the last years I was in school. So it was so, everything happened so late because I was in school for 6 years. I was already 22 or 23 when I realized, oh, sketch. I like voice work. I like character work. I like physical comedy. And then my last year of college, I found myself leaving the bar early and going home on Friday nights to watch Comedy Central Half Hour Comedy Hour.
Oh, kind of fell in love with stand-up.
I did, and I didn't
like
know
that.
Anything about it. You know, SNL was hugely a big deal in the 90s. Chris Farley was like the first person I was like, oh, he's a fat guy. He can move his body. A fat person, you know, like he's hilarious.
He was fat guy that didn't move at all like a fat. He was the most agile, taught me everything about my body. The most agile fat guy that I think he helped a lot of people
really?
With that. I honestly do. I think he did because he was the sketch with Patrick Swayze. Mm. Where there, that is one
changed my life,
and I think I did for a lot of it because, like, hey, look, he's beautiful,
yep,
and, you know, and he doesn't care what he's
committed.
Having fun out there, 100%, yeah, and he's like nobody wants to be standing there with that. I don't want to be standing there with my shirt off, okay? I don't look like Chris Farley. I got some chunk.
You're looking good, by the way.
I'm wearing a black shirt. it's an optical illusion, but I don't look, you know, like Chris Farley. But I sure as hell. Wouldn't want to be standing next to Pat even today.
Totally.
Wouldn't want to be standing next to Patrick Swayze. He probably still has fantastic abs. You know, like he's been in the ground for 6 years. The guy probably still looks fantastic.
I was going
to
say.
Nobody puts baby in a corner. Or them abs. Okay, so you're following.
Anyway, yeah. So I was interested in being like in the physical comedy. I mean, that was like a huge thing for me. And then, so I started watching stand-up comedy and I just started thinking that it was something that interested me. So school ends. And because I'm in Illinois and a lot of people that I knew had already migrated to Chicago and so I headed there with some friends, and that was, you know, it came with its own set of struggles. I wasn't doing anything when I lived in Chicago at the time, except for helping sort of, things and basically, being too fearful to do anything.
A little bit of stage fright?
Balls, money to have headshots, feeling like I'm a crap. Like, I have self-esteem issues.
I think we all do. Huh.
Right before I left my last year of college, my entire apartment building burned down.
And well, that's
literally 2 years later when I lived in Chicago and I was living in Roscoe Village, my apartment burned down.
Real quick, though. Did you do either of those?
I did not.
Okay, I had to ask.
That's a legitimate question. I only spent 2 years in jail. No, I'm just kidding.
Remarkably, the studio is on fire. No. Interestingly. Sure, it started over here on my side of the desk, but I have no idea how this lighter got into my hand. Like,
do you mind if I light this candle?
I wonder why you were drinking that cappuccino and why it smelled like gasoline. What's going on? It's a Molotov cocktail, not a sandwich.
When I was living there in post-college, this is basically the first time I lived outside of my small community. I mean, I was just going through a lot of emotional changes. I was in my mid-20s. I was like learning, you know, living life, learning about the city. I mean, it's an overwhelming city to live in.
Sure, and they call it the New York of the Midwest.
it was awesome. I worked with a guy who was an understudy on Second City. And so I actually got to go to Second City a lot and watch, and I just dreamed. I just dreamed and wished my life away for 20 years, Jackson. Here I am,
really?
20 years later now, just starting stand-up, which is something I wanted to do.
So you became a spectator.
I did become a spectator. I did. So my very first time I ever performed was in Chicago, though. Some friends of mine were trying to start a theater company, and so they would have a benefit. You know, they would have a venue, and they would charge an entrance to raise money for the thing, and I agreed to do.
Because you've acted before and you've got some skills.
And
I had been
writing, you know, as I took the train. I mean, I'd always written down things that I think are fun. You know, just I always kept a note and wrote. And so performed for one of their benefits. It was terrifying. I was terrible. I did not practice or do anything before the night of. And the biggest kicker that night was that probably what kicked my butt the most was that I didn't even have an understanding of the function of a mic stand. So the whoever was on ahead of me, you know, anybody who would be on before me would be taller than I. So I did my entire set looking up at a mic that I had just bent down. So everyone on the floor was basically looking up my nose or at the bottom of my chin.
What year? It was about what? About 2004? Somewhere around there?
Something like that. Two or three or something like that.
So I'm guessing that didn't exactly jumpstart your excitement to go do it again.
No, except... Yeah, no, but it still stuck with me, and Yeah, it still stuck with me, and I don't really have too many really good reasons why I didn't actually start it until I started it, except for fear. It will always be my dream. I won't have failed at it if I haven't started it. I can still hope on that success. Something funny would happen, or a friend would say something funny, and I'd be like, oh, hang on, I want to write that down. And my friends at some point were like,
for what?
This stand-up thing that you've been talking about for 10 years that you haven't done? Yeah, okay. Like, don't bother.
I'm going to use that.
So my friends just kind of got on me a long time, like, if I ever mentioned the word stand-up. So I even almost stopped talking about even wanting to do stand-up because I knew that my friends who love me were going to give me, crap about...
Well, they were tough loving you.
About do it already.
Yeah.
And so I was tired of, being the person who wasn't doing... And no matter what... If I fell in love and thought it was going to be a thing and then it wasn't, like, or if some other, like, I got a dream job or whatever, the thing that's always been present that hasn't left me is the desire to do something in the area of comedy.
Did you ever get that dream job, or did you ever fall in love and get married during?
No.
Are you married right now?
No.
No. And what kind of jobs were you working? Were you out doing some waitressing? What kind of careers have you had?
Well,
because you're wearing clean clothes, you drove here in a car,
you have
jewelry on, you look like you didn't steal. I'm assuming those are roses, even though the color makes them look like pine cones.
Well, they're copper.
Either way,
earrings. He's talking about my jewelry.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
So I'm guessing that you've had a job.
Well, when I first moved to Madison, I got a part-time job that turned quickly into a full-time job at, do you remember, a hippie store on State Street called Shakti?
Yes.
It was open for almost 40 years.
Wow. And then you closed it down.
I did close it down. I ran to the ground.
Started embezzling right away. Got these earrings.
Ran into the ground. So, which was really cool. It was a great place. So, I grew up in a tiny town, moved to the city, to Chicago for 3.5 years, and then I come to Madison. My sister and brother-in-law live here, and so that's why I came.
Little baby city.
It is, but also it felt right. It was like, okay, there's like the friendliness of, but diversity. And,
yes.
And, a Buddhist temple outside, there's like so much to be had here. And so I worked there for 7-8 years. So I got to see, the homeless and the people of Madison, and just anyway, I don't know,
State Street.
The people of State Street, whether they're from out of town or whatever, and it was a great place to work, and it was sweet. You don't even have to wear a bra or shoes when you work a place like that.
I don't wear a bra or shoes.
Well, nice.
Take so, that,
so
society.
in a way, that's a dream job. But then I worked for a restoration company, and that was my last full time job. Was for over 5 years.
You're
I worked for
hammers?
A restoration company. Ironically, worked in fire restoration. So hopefully, I'm getting my like.
Did Shakti burn down?
It did not.
Are you sure about that?
Valid question.
Okay.
Invalid question.
I don't know how you met one like your new career like after you burned your old one down.
When you have one fire, you don't think you're just like, well, that already happened. That'll never happen again. When it happens a second time, you feel like anything could happen.
I don't know. I like to think that if my house burned down once, I would kind of all the time think about like,
oh, it could happen anytime.
Down, the house
even more
down
so. Yeah. Well, I know. Like, maybe my
well, lightning
more.
Never strikes twice in the same place. I don't think we have anything to worry about, kids.
Go ahead and
get rid of the Christmas lights. Put the candles back on the tree like we used to back at the turn of the 1900s. Let's go crazy. Don't worry about watering it. It's a tinderbox.
That's funny. So, that is a huge reason.
So what were you doing for fire restoration?
I worked, it was emergency services. So if a homeowner had a fire, I worked in the personal property. So I'd be basically one of the first people working in tandem with your insurance company.
How was business?
To make your claim hot. No, it was sunny, dirty, hard, sad, hard work.
Was it busy work? Did you have a lot going on?
Extremely.
Really?
There are people have fires every day all the time and water losses. But
I can't be blamed for all of these fires that happen all around the city of Madison.
I'm not supposed to be blamed.
Just because you found my business card behind for fire restoration doesn't mean I'm to be blamed for any of these fires.
But what I felt like it did was like, okay, so now I'm helping people who have had fires. Like, so, it was a really, really hard job. In the fifth year of working there, I had done so well at my job that an insurance adjuster referred me to clients, and I got referred to a 78-year-old hoarder who lived in a huge, huge house with probably about 30 cats. And I spent about 6 months with her, where I would normally work with a homeowner at most maybe a week.
So you're going to that. So what did you do? Did you go into cleaning that house out?
Kind of. Insurance companies can't pay out until they have an understanding of what their property is worth. And I had to assess and make sense of all of her personal property so that she could get reimbursed or paid or whatever. And so it was a huge, huge undertaking. She was completely mentally unstable. And
so how much did the insurance company pay her after the fire?
Well, she had a $1 million policy.
Whoa.
And
buy a lot of cats.
No lie, I'm not even kidding you. I feel like in her will, her property goes to her cats.
Well, I mean,
she had freezers full of dead cats.
Where do you keep your dead cats, Allie? All right,
you know,
you guys are pointing fingers here.
I mean, okay? I understand in the summer months.
Yeah, you gotta do something. All right, you know, you get other animals coming in there and getting into them if you keep them outside.
So it was while there that I was in such a dark place and so depressed and so sad. I didn't even want to go to sleep at night because I knew I had to wake up and go back to that environment the next day. I mean, I was getting paid really well, but it did not compare to how toxic it was for me. And so mentally, physically, I probably lost 20 pounds. Pretty thin when I first started doing comedy because I was literally like sick. But it was one of those situations where I was so dark, I had no reason to get up in the morning. I had no reason to go to sleep, to get up, to go back to that. I had nothing. And so it took me to that really deep place of, well, then what? So I went to the comedy club and I started watching. And then one day had the nerve to sign up and go up. And I quit the restoration company. I mean, I'm kind of getting out of order, but I quit the restoration company and realized that I don't have children. I don't have dependents. I don't have a family. All that's really important to me is my happiness. I have no reason to live. And so I'm going to absolve myself of any career or job that has any major responsibility. So at 38, mm-hmm. I quit my job, left insurance, left a salary, and moved into a basement apartment. And I'm living like I'm a 20-year-old and started waiting tables and just started going to the comedy club because I just realized I don't want to expend all of my energy on a career that's unsatisfying. I make jewelry. I do other creative things. Like I like interior design. Like I do other things that fulfill me on a deeper level than a job. I do not want that to suck my life away, but I still have to pay my bills.
Sure.
So I stripped it down.
The electric bill doesn't get paid in happiness.
It doesn't. No.
Yeah, you
get, and like, I didn't even have
good
that.
Mood. And then I'm like, well, see how good a mood you are when it gets dark.
Totally. Totally.
Hopefully your smile's so bright it's going to light up that refrigerator because it's about to get dark in there.
Indeed.
So what was it like doing comedy for the first time?
I mean, it was exhilarating. It was probably the most impactful learning experience in the moment that I can think of in the last couple of years. That first time just being I have to say that overall, just a sense of pride that I showed up. I mean, I've had to change my outlook on things and be like, and to stay positive throughout everything. And that included that first time was like, even if you suck, which I did, at least I showed up. And that's still how I feel today.
Sure.
That is still how I feel today. Even if I get on myself because if I bomb or I still walk away thinking, at least I got out of the house, because that's a hard thing to do. And I think when I was in college and I was in plays and things, I had a really hard time if a director, you know, if we took a break and worked on a scene, if it was a scene that I was involved in, I felt self-conscious that I was taking up people's time, or I don't like for people to see me in rehearsal. I want them to see finished product. It's like, I don't want you to see half my painting. I want you to see it when it's done. And so I have had to get over a lot of hurdles in terms of like, it's never done. Stand-up comedies, you're never done.
No, no.
A bit's never done written. You've never peaked on that or whatever. It's just unfinished. And I've had to let go of a lot of that. I felt very brave. It was a huge personal hurdle for me to do it. And when I first started, like I said, because I had been sick, I was probably the thinnest I've ever been in my life. Sort of hard to take when you've always sort of identified yourself as being having girth and I would be okay with that. I actually almost felt better in that skin because I was so much more used to it. So to have this attention, what it did for me was make me work a little harder. And I set a goal for myself when I began doing stand-up comedy that I would not sleep with any comics. And there will be no gossip about it. And this is true. So I just decided not doing that. And I am not.
Wow, that's hard because what you're really saying is, you know, I don't want to sleep with really depressed, barely barely employed people.
I didn't say I didn't want to.
I won't allow myself. You're really limiting yourself to cutting your options down there.
But I sort of set some rules for myself, like, okay, as a woman, I know that there's going to be, you know, I'm going to have some attention that it has nothing to do with my comedy. And I was really, really 100% more interested in establishing myself or getting respect as a comic. As a comic, which I try not to even like wear have cleavage when I do stand up. I'm a person first, and I'm a comedian. I didn't want to misconstrue attention, whether that's you know any attention for it just being about. That I just wanted to be a comic, and so like it really helped me to sort of stay on track with that and deflect as much energy as I could that had to do with sexuality.
But yeah, no, I get that. There are hurdles, and let's not pretend like they're not. But you don't let that slow you down.
Well, I run a show now. It's I'm
where at? What's the show going
okay,
on? When
yeah, let's do that. Right.
Let's do it.
It's at the North Street Cabaret.
Oh.
So it's
but
a,
it's not a cabaret show, or is it a cabaret show?
It's not. The venue is called the North Street Cabaret, and it's just an entertainment
cabaret,
venue.
What I think of is.
Yeah, right.
That no translated one perfectly.
Jackson
audio.
Just did a little dance.
He's oh, shimmy. Shimmy. Yeah, shimmy.
Oh, I wish this was a.
Oh yeah, for a 240-pound man, I can shake it.
I have the cutest view, audience. Right now, I have the cutest view.
She's looking at our
Jackson.
Engineer. He's hot.
No, it's you
His
are.
His name's Reginald. He's one of those guys where if he was cast in a movie, he could play either Italian or Middle Eastern or Mexican. You're not really quite sure.
So true.
Not really quite sure where he's from, but he's got some bronze, beautiful skin and abs you could bounce a gold dollar off of.
Oh my.
Yeah. I paint a picture.
I think that's your own fantasy, isn't it?
I'm not gonna lie. I wouldn't kick him out of bed for eating crackers. I would not do that.
Well, yeah, I'm skipping around. So I worked at the Tip Top Tavern, which is owned by the same people who own this place. That was the place I waited tables
for
2 years.
A lot of places I've worked at and lived have been lit on fire. You let me put this comedy show
right?
on.
Right? I'll spare you.
You know, my accidents
or,
happen.
Right? So anyway, I feel very fortunate that I was given the opportunity when they finally opened the place in September and they wanted to have a comedy night by default because I had been in the family. I feel incredibly fortunate enough that I get to host a once-a-month show there,
a lot of fun,
which
isn't it?
I call Comedy at the Cabaret. It's a lot of work to get together.
You gotta let people know about the show.
You do.
Gotta get the word out.
I have to be on my computer a whole lot.
Oh, Facebook.
I feel like as a comic, I've been on the computer.
Look, once you advertise
lot.
It on MySpace and LinkedIn, and LinkedIn, you shouldn't have to go. You shouldn't have to put it anywhere else.
I put an ad in the paper.
the Yellow Pages. I gotta tell you what, ads in the Yellow Pages these days, super cheap.
Truly. They
pay you to put ads in there.
But then only people like 70 or older are gonna get that.
That's your audience, right?
Yes.
We all remember Cagney and Lacey. All these jokes surround.
That's going to go over the heads of so many people in this room. So I host a show there once a month. It's every second Thursday of the month. I call it Comedy at the Cabaret, and it's very fun. It's been a good platform for me to I can sort of do whatever I want. So it feels like a beautiful a thing that I've been given that I can do what I like. You know, the second show that I did, I came out and did sort of a rap. I like change the words to an Iggy Azalea song.
Hell yeah,
like I got to open
fun.
My own show or whatever.
I'm
not gonna lie and say it wasn't a little bit corny, but
whatever.
It was mine, and I could do whatever I want. So I think it's gonna really help me in a lot of ways, just to have that freedom. I'm getting my sea legs in terms of being a host, which you know has its own.
That's helpful.
It is. Yeah. So I have a lot of work to do. And so I'm just getting going. And so I've only had three. And so I hope you can be on one.
So what are your goals for the next 5 years?
5 years? That's too far.
What are your goals for the next 5 minutes? Finish that cappuccino and eat the rest of that ham sandwich?
Maybe poop. As soon as I leave.
We have heated toilets here.
Shut up.
Check it out.
I wish I'd done it before I came in here.
I'm tour the building. When I show people around this building, the one thing I always make sure to show them is that bathroom. I love that. I used to use the women's room all the time.
Just cleaner or what?
Yes! Because men are disgusting.
They are.
But because here's, I would go in there. All right, this ain't
what?
Right.
Tell me.
I would go in the men's room and either, all right, there's a lunker still laying in there. All
lunker.
Right, like, yeah, come on now. Like, clean up after yourself. All right. Or this is the most alarming. All right. And this is weird. You'd find like a half eaten sub and a bag of Doritos in the garbage can. What are you doing?
No!
It's a one stall. Like, I know you were working by it. Well, you sat in there and you ate that sub and you ate them Doritos.
Yep.
And you finished up and you went back to work and there's something wrong with you.
There's something wrong with you.
But then an email came out.
What did it say? It
said, stop using the women's restroom.
Oh.
It was a single stall. It was a single stall. And I was the only.
Did you put the seat down?
Of course, put the seat down.
Okay. Does your wife teach you that?
What's that? No. I don't do that at home.
He gave a look of, I could do whatever I want in my own toilet.
Well, here's the deal. It's much easier to drop the seat than to put it back up. And here's the excuse. Oh, I fell in. Well, I look where I'm sitting down, even if it's an office chair. I still look before I sit down.
Smart. It's a life hack. I have a feeling that Betty down the hall was dropping a deuce in the ladies' room and, like, passing it off. Must have been Jackson Jones.
Well, you know what? I think it's a good place to end. We really came around here.
Poop.
And it's a really interesting story that you have, and I think you tell it really well. It's neat to see somebody who went through some struggles. Life wasn't the easiest for you, obviously, but you've got a really nice outlook about it.
Closing out with this sentiment, but for real, like, I am kind of walking proof of someone who didn't take a lot of risks or, didn't do a lot of things that I would have considered brave to do, and to be able to do it almost 40, it feels great. And so the reward, even if I don't do well at the thing, I'm still so proud of myself for being brave. And it has given me so much more than I ever thought it could, even when I fail.
Sometimes you got to be brave, and that's brave of you to say that. And the studio is on fire. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Jackson's American Tales. I really hope you enjoy this podcast. And if you do, please tell your friends about it. That's how social media works. Click share, let them know that you like it. Or heck, if I annoy the biscuits out of you, maybe I'll annoy your friends as well. And that's kind of funny. So what I'm getting at is click share, and then please tune in next week. Thank you so much for listening to Jackson's American Tales. In next week's episode, we'll be chatting with my personal Lego dealer. He quit a very good job to follow his dreams to open a Lego store. Find out what happens when you decide to do something most people would view as a crazy decision. That's next week on Jackson's American Tales.